News from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 1st, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment, too, with all the day's agricultural news, including a plan in Illinois to increase ethanol usage. It would require 10% of the state's gasoline fuel needs to be met by the renewable energy made from corn. That percentage would ratchet up over time. We'll talk with Drew Lerner today. He's a World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, we'll hear from University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Knapsiger. He'll recap the nitrogen recommendations for the state. That's all new. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby March wheat, 62 7.5 cents. The May futures at 374 were off 7. March futures in Kansas City's wheat pit at $4.33 a bushel, off 6 today. From the nearby corn contracts, 224 1/4 in the March, down 3 3/4 for the day. May corn at 234 3/4, off 4 cents. July futures at 244.5 were down 3 3/4, and December contract gap lower today at 261.5 and finished with that gap intact, down 2 3/4. March soybeans, 577.5, down 2 3/4 today. The May futures off 3 cents at 591, and July at 602, down 2 3/4. November beans at 614.5, down 3 3/4 on the day. March bean meal at 172.40, off $1.80. The March bean oil at 23.80. They were up 21 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, March feeder cattle, 107.12.5. They were 25 higher. April live cattle at 87.02.5, down 20. And the April lean hogs in Chicago at $62.70 were up $1.22.5. Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. Nice to talk to you.
It's good to talk with you, and you'll be covering corn, I believe, next week at our All Day Ag Outlook meeting on Tuesday. We appreciate you coming over for that.
Well, corn's an exciting commodity, and it's been a profitable commodity to trade, and we'll have a lot of fun talking about it and talking about certain strategies if you're leaning one way or the other in the marketplace.
Absolutely. The Beef House on Tuesday, all day long. We'll give you more details on that one just a bit later. Let's start in the corn pit, where the December contract did, in fact, gap lower and left that gap intact today on the daily charts. Does it really mean anything, do you think?
Well, it was significant because corn has been a pillar of strength. We've had several bullish ideas here. Of course, the ongoing dry weather, even though some of the forecasters are predicting rainfall and some of the weather forecasts, with Collins giving a basically increased ethanol usage and demand this coming year, and of course China backing out of corn exports, and corn is considered a energy commodity, which I think that's kind of a tribute to that wonderful commodity. And at the same time, we are seeing anhydrous ammonia tanks and some field work going on in the Midwest at this present time. I think the other idea is that even though China's out of the market, Argentina has a beautiful crop of corn coming on, as well as Brazil. And so some of the export business is going to come from there as well as the U.S.
How much weather premium do you think is built into this marketplace at this point, and or is it ethanol premium?
Well, I would answer your first question first by saying I think there is at least a 10-cent premium built into it. And the reason I say that, historically, with a 1.7 carryover, a 1.8 billion bushel carryover, one would think of a fair price value somewhere in that 235 to 255 trading range. So we do have some fluff in the corn market. As far as an energy market and how much premium that has, is I'm going to refer back to a couple of weeks ago when we had Mitch Dawson on there. And, you know, definitely an ethanol plant in your backyard is a, I'm going to say, a 5 to 7-cent historic basis improver. Whether it reflects back to the flat price or not, I don't know, but it is definitely a value-added commodity for that particular geographic area that buys grain. And, you know, we have seen price basis levels improve 5 to 7 cents, so in certain areas close to an ethanol plant. So let's go that way. Whether it affects the bottom line or not as far as the carryover flat price, that's still a debate. We'll talk about that on the next Tuesday.
Let me explore this topic just a bit with you because I want to check your institutional knowledge on corn or other commodities. Can you remember when there was a new market use that developed for a commodity and how it did or did not change the picture for that commodity? I'm sort of running through my mind trying to think what that might be, and it could have been a market overseas.
Well, you know, the one that jumps out at us quickly is sugar. We're seeing it turn from a sugar. We know everybody knows what sugar is used for, but a value-added sideline like ethanol, and, you know, that's changed the Pacific Rim and South America and Argentina, Mexico, and Brazil's economy in a big fashion. So, you know, that's a big one. And, of course, we have to go back to the historic days of Tom Hieronymus at the University of Illinois. Whenever we have improved exports, that's the multiplier effect in the grain market. And, you know, we could always remember back in the great Russian grain sales how that was quite a multiplier in the marketplace. You know, ethanol, of course, is value-added, it's quite a versatile grain from feed grains to industrial usage, from corn chips to, corn sweetener to ethanol. So corn is a versatile commodity, and it has a lot of uses, which is tremendous.
Yeah, you actually, when you mentioned sugar, I immediately thought of corn sweetener and fructose. And do you remember when that happened? That would have been, what, in the early 70s?
We all remember back to starch, and we think of daily starch, and of course we think of corn sweeteners, and one of the earliest players of it was ADM corn sweeteners, and they were a big player of that, and that was under the guidance of Duane Andreas, because sure, he was one of the forefathers in developing that concept.
Well, I'll go back and check historically and see if maybe I'll check with Daryl Good and see if he can tell me what happened to the marketplace at that point with the corn when fructose was introduced more as a substitute for sugar in colas.
You know, it really didn't create much price swing when it was all said and done. It was just another usage of corn as for its industrial use. But it was an impact, you know. It did create a tremendous impact on the market.
At the time.
You bet.
All right. Okay. Then let's talk about today's marketplace again and switch from the corn to the beans, where we dropped a couple of cents.
You know, beans, with corn down 4 cents and wheat down 7 to 10 cents, depending on which exchange we're looking at, beans performed fairly well. And one idea was there was an export sale of soybean oil, I understand, to Iran. We understand that the basis levels had weakened a little bit in the U.S. And, of course, the other idea was with soybean, the good growing conditions in South America, beans being sold to China at 30, 40-cent discount to the U.S., all those indicated, you know, maybe weakness showing up in the soybeans a little more than just 3 cents a bushel, but it's a gradual impact, and that's and we are a few weeks before we start seeing major exports of new crop beans out of South America.
And finally, we're out of time, but a quick word on the wheat, that 7 to 10 cent drop there in Chicago.
Well, definitely. It boiled down to, you know, inter-commodity spreads. It also indicated flat price liquidation. The trend in wheat still higher, but there was definite profit-taking on better weather forecasts.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Hey, have a profitable day, Todd, and we'll see you next we'll see you this Friday on Commodity Week, and we'll see you next week in Covington, Indiana, there at the Beef House.
Thanks much, Paul.
Have a good one.
You too. Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons. He'll be here for Commodity Week, which airs at 11:30 on Saturday mornings. You can pick it up off our website at willag.org on Friday evenings after about 6 o'clock. You can also find out all the details about our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting on that website. It's at the Beef House next week on Tuesday. Kicks off at 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone. We hope that you will join us at that point. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight across the two-state region, it'll be mostly cloudy, scattered showers, a few isolated thunderstorms in Indiana. Lows, he says, will range from 27 in far northwestern Illinois to near 50 in the far south. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a complete look at the agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee says he expects his committee to recommend to the Senate Budget Committee that no cuts be made in agriculture for fiscal year 2007. Saxby Chambliss says farmers are willing to pay their fair share for budget deficit reconciliation, but not a disproportionate share. The president has called for about $9 billion in cuts in agriculture for FY 2007. In other issues, Chambliss yesterday announced there will be a hearing on March 9th to review USDA oversight of the Packers and Stockyards Act. The Illinois Senate has approved a plan to increase ethanol use in the state, but there are concerns the measure could lead to higher fuel prices. Sean Crawford reports.
The legislature has for years served as a booster club for the corn-based fuel, promoting it as a way to reduce reliance on foreign oil, improve the environment, and help out farmers. But the latest proposal, that would require a certain percentage of all fuel sold to be ethanol-based, has many questioning if the state can meet the higher demand. Unless the state can increase the number of ethanol production facilities, even supporters like Senate Republican leader Frank Watson admit motorists could take a hit.
What happens if we can't reach the goal is that we obviously start bringing product in from elsewhere and the price goes up.
The House will consider the ethanol requirements next. Those pushing the idea say it would allow for millions of dollars for research and construction of new ethanol production facilities, which will help the state meet the higher demand. I'm Sean Crawford.
The Illinois ethanol bill would establish a minimum of 10% of all gasoline used in Illinois by volume be ethanol by 2008 and sets a goal of expanding that standard to 15% by 2012. It also would reduce the current state sales tax incentive for ethanol from its current rate of 20% of the state sales tax to 10% this July and phase it out altogether by 2015. South Korea is preparing to send government officials to inspect U.S. beef production facilities within days as part of a negotiated process to ease South Korea's import ban. Details on the trip are being worked out now in Seoul, and a U.S. industry representative said the delegation is expected to arrive in the U.S. on March 6. U.S. industry officials said the delegation is expected to inspect more than 20 U.S. beef facilities. Meanwhile, Mexico yesterday published new rules that will allow for importation of bone-in beef products from the U.S. Mexico will not buy U.S. bone-in beef cuts unless spinal cords, brains, and skulls are first removed, even though the country imports only U.S. cattle under 30 months of age. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says this week's trumpeted U.S.-Colombia free trade deal may face a tough fight in Congress over sugar issues.
It'll be a bigger issue in Colombia because, of course, Colombia wanted to import 350,000 tons of sugar to us annually, and we negotiated that down to 50,000 tons, which is less than 1% of our annual U.S. sugar production. But even less than 1% can turn on the sugar industry in the United States and maybe get their opposition. As of now, 24 hours after negotiations have been completed, the American Sugar Alliance has withheld judgment on the free trade agreement with Colombia.
Grassley says the U.S.-Colombia pact may not get an up or down vote by lawmakers until next year. And the Australian Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics says beef production in Australia will rise from 2.07 to 2.10 million metric tons. About two-thirds of local beef production is exported. Australia is the second biggest global exporter of beef after, not the U.S., but Brazil. The volume of Australian exports are closely tied to local production levels. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, the U of I is in the process of releasing a set of new nitrogen recommendations for the state. Up next, the updated nitrogen ranges and how they work into a broader set of recommendations for the entirety of the Midwest. The University of Illinois is in the process of updating the long-standing N formula farmers in the state use to calculate how many pounds of nitrogen to apply to a cornfield to maximize yield. Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger says the new formula will work on a series of ranges based on the price of nitrogen and the cash price of corn.
The important thing, though, is that when nitrogen prices go up as rapidly as they're going up now, it's fairly important to reduce the amount of nitrogen if we want to keep the return to nitrogen at its highest possible point. And our data should give people some confidence in doing that. In on average, when we look at it, corn after corn, corn after soybean, a price increase of about $100 in a ton of ammonia should translate into a reduction in rate of about 10 pounds per acre.
Here's the short version of how that works for corn following soybeans. At $450 a ton and a $2 cash price for corn, the new Illinois recommendation says apply 147 pounds of N. We'll leave the cash price the same and start upping that nitrogen. At $550, 134 pounds. If nitrogen costs $650 a ton, 123 pounds. At $750 a ton, apply 114 and say the cost explodes to $850 a ton. Then at $2 corn, you'll apply 106 pounds of N. You won't remember all that, and Emerson Nafziger wrote a four-page article explaining the ranges. It can be found on the University of Illinois Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin website. That's at www.ipm.uic.edu/bulletin.
So we're finding, on average, that we, as nitrogen moves from, say, $450 to $850 a ton, that's a big jump, but we might well see jumps like that, that we ought to be backing the nitrogen rates down by about 40 pounds from around 150 if we have corn following soybean to about 110. Now, getting down towards 100 pounds is going to cause a lot of discomfort among a lot of people, and that's one reason we keep the range. But we also know that at very expensive nitrogen, it's really easy to lose money by putting on too much. And so I think the 200-pound rates probably need to back almost no matter what, because our data simply say that it's very, very seldom that you need that much nitrogen to get the best return to nitrogen.
There is a separate recommendation for corn following corn. Generally speaking, it's between 20 and 40 pounds higher than the corn after soybean recommendation. By the way, that final pounds per acre you've been hearing from NAFSIGR is total supplied nitrogen. And while there is no longer a need to subtract the 40-pound soybean credit, that's built into the new ranges, the other nitrogen sources should still be taken off that total. One other note, at least three other states in the Midwest are working to update their recommendations, too. All should be following the price and range pattern Illinois will use. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. I made a phone call while you were listening to Dave Dickey on the news and myself, of course, on tape, talking to Emerson NAFSIGR, to Daryl Good, asking him the same question that I asked to Paul Cooley just a few minutes ago about how the ethanol market might change, if it does, over the long run, the corn market, and if there is any comparison historically. The one we came up to with immediately, of course, was fructose. Checked with Daryl, and his first thought was, hey, that sounds like an interesting thought. And then, of course, he came back, and Daryl has all these in the back of his mind and said, well, but only 200 to 300 million bushels of corn is used to produce fructose. And Keith Collins is talking about a 500 million bushel increase in the number of corn bushels that will be used for ethanol in just this one year. So not really much of a comparison. We'll see if we can come up with something else again later. On the line with us now to take a look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
And a good afternoon to you, Todd.
Well, tell me about this marketplace and what you think of today's trade in Chicago and how it works into your cash grain market.
Well, you know, it was a little setback today, but, you know, we've tried to push corn above resistance levels, and it's bumped up there, and it just can't get through it, and I think they just kind of got a little tired of it and took a little profit today. I don't think anything's really hurt real, real badly, but we had a little setback. The farmers have been very, very good about selling into this rally, and basis levels have improved a little bit on the nearby, but we have such a good carry in the market. They've been booking the deferred, so train values are a couple cents weaker out in the April through July slot. So, you know, there's some good news and bad news both out there, Todd.
Tell me about the availability of train cars and how you see it over the long run.
Corn trains have not been all that tough to come by here lately. We've been managing to keep pretty well cleaned out on corn, but we've had trouble getting individual cars, which we don't load a lot of bean trains, but we do load, you know, 15-car units. It's been really tough getting cleaned out on beans because farmers are moving both, and so we've had more struggle there than we have with the corn, Todd.
And what are your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn today is 205, cash beans are 560, and cash wheat is 338 today.
Thanks much, Kay. And by the way, we'll see you next Tuesday over at the Beef House, won't we?
Looking forward to it, Todd.
All right. Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joining us here on a Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. In a couple minutes, we'll talk about the agricultural weather with meteorologist Drew Lerner. By the way, agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. You can always find out more at willag.org. Your local newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. University of Illinois instructors are getting an update on how to handle any discipline problems that arise on Friday, when several campus town bars are sponsoring unofficial St. Patrick's Day. U of I Vice President for Student Affairs Bill Riley says previous unofficial St. Patrick's Day celebrations have included intoxicated students disrupting some classes. The Mumford House on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus is on the list of endangered historic places released by the Landmarks Preservation Council of Illinois. The 130-year-old farmhouse is the oldest building on campus, but the council says it's been in disrepair for several years. A university spokesperson says they're making plans to move the structure to a new location at the U of I's South Farms before doing any renovations. A measure headed to the Illinois Senate for a vote would allow people with serious illnesses to use marijuana under a doctor's care. Committee approval today of Chicago Democratic Senator John Culleton's bill is the first time the legislation has gotten this far in decades. A federal appeals court says a judge's order banning certain kinds of prayer in the Indiana House deserves review, but the court is refusing to lift the order. Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma is asking that the injunction be set aside until his appeal can be heard. Governor Mitch Daniels is predicting that Indiana residents will be getting a break on their cable bills and other telecommunication services. Daniels says he will sign legislation approved by the General Assembly to end regulation of the telecom industry in Indiana. Daniels and other supporters say the bill will lead to more competition among phone, cable, and internet providers, thus keeping prices low while expanding voice, video, and internet choices for consumers. Attending Southern Illinois University in Carbondale this fall would cost more under a plan being promoted by the school's chancellor. Walter Wendler plans to ask the SIU Board of Trustees next week that incoming freshmen pay $249 more a year in tuition and that the entire student body pay $242 more in general fees. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You can learn more about the ag programming here on WILL at WILLAG.org, including a complete rundown of our Tuesday all-day Ag Outlook meeting at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll kick off at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 Eastern Time. You can come and register before that. The meeting is absolutely free, with the exception of the meal at the noon hour, and you'll write a check to the Beef House for $8.50 if you want to partake of the meal. On hand with us for the day-long event will be Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Dan Zwicker, Vince Reinecke, Brian Maple, Bill Mayer, Greg Johnson, Kay Whitlock, Randy Matheny of the Lincolnland Agri-Energy in Palestine, and Raymond Deffenbaugh of Big River Resources. Both of those are ethanol producing companies. Bob Thompson and Otto Doring will take a look at the Farm Bill. We'll have also Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy and our own Ed Kieser along to take a look at the weather. Mike Zuzulo, Paul Cooley, Pete Manhart, and Clayton Pope will be with us, along with Gary Schnipke, who handles all of the Farm Doc programming up on that website for your crop insurance needs. And he'll be going through the Farm Doc and how to use the crop insurance calculators. That's next Tuesday right here, the WILL AM 580 Agricultural All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. Not right here. It's actually over in Covington, Indiana at the Beef House. Online with us now to talk about the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated, out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon.
All right. We need to know what's happening with the weather. It looks like there's calls for rainfall in the southwest. Can this actually be?
Well, we can call for it all we want. It doesn't seem to materialize very well very often. We do have an opportunity for showers to develop out that way as we go through the night tonight, and more likely tomorrow and Friday. I don't think we're going to see a real substantial amount of precipitation. It'll be a tease to farmers far more than it will be of benefit. Actually, the concern that I have is that those few areas that do get halfway decent amounts of rainfall, and we're only talking about a half inch or less, will probably be faced with a very quick green up and some aggressive crop development because the soil temperatures are so warm, and that will likely raise the potential for crop stress of a more serious nature if we don't get follow-up precipitation. So I personally would rather see it stay dry out there until it started raining in a more serious manner, and that's not going to be the case. So crop stress and additional problems with the crop in hard red wheat country is still very probable as we move forward over the next week to 10 days. Now, there's a couple of other opportunities for rainfall coming up, another one on the 7th and 8th of March, which is midweek next week. That one will probably not produce much rain of significance in the High Plains region, so West Texas, northward into East Colorado and southwest Nebraska will still have a problem with dryness. But another storm system, maybe getting closer to mid-month, will have a better potential for producing some rain out there. But we still have La Nina with us, and as long as that's the case, the month of March will have a drier bias.
How are things shaping up for harvest weather in South America?
It's quite wet right now across a big part of Brazil, but believe it or not, they're managing to get some field work done anyway. It's just an amazing place down there. Field work is actually ahead of schedule prior to this particular week. We did lose some ground. around this weekend. Some additional loss will occur as we go through the coming week as additional rain and thunderstorms take place. And I'm talking about just delays. I'm not talking about losses in production by any means. The crop down there looks wonderful and will stay that way. Drier weather will develop in the second week of the two-week outlook, and that should help to get harvesting back on track. We should not have any real serious problems with Brazil's harvest, at least through the middle part of this month and maybe longer than that, even though we'll have a little bit of delay here in this first week. It does look like Argentina will see some favorable weather right after we get through with some rain that'll come up here over the next 3 days.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons. Don't forget to join us again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the ag markets on the pre-opening commodity market report. And join us Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been the Closing Market Report. Agricultural information made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.